welcome you to the afternoon show on 88 Radio Life and Style, brought to you proudly by Bidvest McCarthy Toyota Bolito. I'm Dave Charles, and as an unusual start to this particular Tuesday edition of the afternoon show, I have a special guest with me called Matt Draper. And Matt is, he has an independent wine portfolio, so guess what? We're going to be talking wine today. Why not? Matt, welcome. Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, hey, you got a terrible job, but someone's got to do it. I salute you.
You know what they say, if you're good at something, you should never do it for free. So I drink for a living.
Yeah. Now, it was interesting because you were test driving champagne the other day at a function that some of our team were at. And they thought you were hilarious. You were saying how well one of these champagnes went with KFC. And I thought, this guy has got to come on the afternoon show, because I've never heard that before.
I think, like, wine's one of those things people can be quite kind of finicky and geeky about. And we kind of need to throw the rule book away, like we have with so many other things. And I think, you know, people always think wine has to go with fancy food, but that's not necessarily the case. You know, what do we eat a lot of? You know, a lot of fast food at the moment, and you know, there are options for that, and it's just about knowledge and really going out there and tasting as many different things as possible. Like we were talking about, we were drinking a really nice Cup Classique, not actually champagne. Champagne is an address, not a drink. Okay, so champagne is in France, whereas Cup Classique is the South African version of the sparkling wine they make in Champagne. And I think it was quite a cool, like, event we were doing. And some quite top-end kind of media people. And they all kind of like a bit nervous to drink it first. And then they had this beautiful glass of Grambeck Cup Classique Blanc de Blanc, which is 100% Chardonnay. And they're like, wow, this is so delicious. We don't really have this. And I thought, okay, well, I'm not doing my job enough if you don't know this wine.
But they said it a wine, but it's actually a Méthode Champenois.
Champenois Cup Classique. I mean, what is
sparkling wine?
It's a sparkling wine. It's just wine with bubbles in it. Okay. And it's quite a long story about how they make that. And it's quite hard to talk about it without having a glass in my hand, to be honest. But it's a bottle fermented. It's a still wine. They separate the juice from the skins. So you just get grape juice. They partially ferment it in tank or barrel, whatever the case may be, whatever the winemaker decides. But with bubbly in particular, you got to pick it quite green, because it goes through two fermentations. You don't want the sugar too high, so you don't want to have sugar plus yeast equals alcohol, so you don't want a very high alcoholic drink. So they pick it quite green, which means not as ripe, not as much sugar, and it means it's much more acidic. Why do I bring that up to tell you now is because we were talking about what food it goes with, and we were saying that acidity and those really aggressive bubbles of Blanc de Blanc, made which is made from Chardonnay, go deliciously with KFC. And, I mean, that's a hard thing to pair with normally. You'd think KFC, all that fat and spice and grease and deliciousness. You don't really think about a...
Well, exactly. It almost is... it's almost, dare I say, a bit like wearing a designer outfit with some really ordinary shoes.
But you see, this is obviously... I mean, you know, you can't see... This is radar, so you can't see... that's exactly what I'm wearing. Often I find those contrasts are what make things more exciting. We're talking about the same thing, and you know, being somebody who lives in Durban, there's something we can be really proud of and celebrate and make a flag of. In fact, we should make it our flag for Durban as a bunny chow. And you know, it's very difficult to pair wine with curry, all that heat. You know, it's very difficult. You actually need something with lots of sugar. And again, there's, you know, a wine, we talk about sparkling wine, but those nectars that are quite popular at the moment, like sparkling Cup Classique with very high sugar, incredible, the bunny chow.
Now, I want to ask you, because here's the thing, a lot of folk don't really understand wine as a pairing with food, and it's quite difficult to explain that it's not just a drink to wash it down.
No.
There is a kind of chemical, almost complexity, that changes metaphysically the entire experience of both eating and drinking when you bring wine and food together. And while a lot of folk will hum and haw and go off at a tangent on the and extol the virtues of a particular wine, which makes it kind of almost inaccessible to the average punter like me, for those that simply want to experience the joy of putting together two essential ingredients in for a good life, good food, and a glass of good wine, and then see what happens. And that's what I'm trying to understand a little bit more.
No, you're spot on. I mean, I think good food and good wine are inseparable. You know, you think about the best restaurants in the world, you can't help but think about a glass of wine on that table. And that's because those in the know better. An oyster on its own, I'm going back to champagne. We should have done this conversation purely on bubbly and champagne. But you go back to an oyster, the simple oyster. You pull it off a rock. Maybe you put a little bit of some pepper on there, which is just a seed, and a little bit of salt, which is also from the sea. Now that's delicious, but yeah. Now you have that with a cold glass of bubbly. It's life changing. Now we're talking, you know. Now we're talking. Now we're not just talking. It changes the vibe completely. And sure, alcohol does have an effect. It does relax you, does help you to kind of get through the day. But definitely does also help with food. It helps with digestion. And it also helps you enjoy a company of people that maybe you don't want to be around. It's great for a family gathering. Yeah.
You're right. There's a thing about wine, though, that it's got a zip to do with wine itself, but it's rather as a marketing exercise for restaurants. You know, the way that a restaurant will murder you with the price of a very average bottle of wine.
Yeah.
And the fact that they sort of almost psych you into it by presenting you with the wine list. Not a drinks list, it's a wine list.
Oh.
And you're almost expected to sort of, you know, to pretend you're overseas and not convert. Because
true.
You can't convert. Now look at the price of this. I saw that in Tops at Lifestyle for literally half the price. Now I've gone across to a restaurant and the same wine. Why?
That's a very good you know, I have a lot of friends who own restaurants, and let me tell you, it's no easy game. And, you know, it's not only wine that they multiply the prices by that much. It's just because wine is slightly more expensive than a beer a cocktail.
You're not going to do the same on a beer or a Coke.
Same markup. In fact, Coca-Cola, they mark up even further.
Is it?
Absolutely. The golden number, you know, some like hotels will times what they pay for by four.
But Matt, let me challenge you on that, because
okay.
I've had a whiskey at a restaurant, and I paid, you know, about 50 odd bucks for a glass of whiskey.
Like a Talamadu or something.
Yeah, average. I mean, just ordinary you know, whiskey and soda, 50 odd. A glass of wine is 65 rand.
Well, okay, so that's again, they need to recover their costs, man. So if they pay for a bottle of wine, 65 rand. They'll charge that per glass, and the next three glasses are profit, you know, or the next two.
But what I'm saying
also
is
that then if
you buy a bottle, you're still paying this enormous. And I think it's kind of almost in a sense, it's okay if it's a celebration, if it's a, you know, anniversary or your birthday, then you've got a, you know, $400 bottle of wine. You push the boat out.
Absolutely.
But then you look at your options for an ordinary kind of night out or afternoon delight, dare I use that term, and you really want a bottle of wine, but the price is kind of, you say, oh, come on. You know, it just pushes the bill to just too far north of reality.
I think basically what I would say to this is, if you drink a glass of wine at 65 rand or 105 rand or 165 rand, and you don't think that glass was worth it, if you don't try and work backwards to what you think it should cost, if you drink that glass of wine and it's 150 rand and you go, oh, I'm in heaven. This is just delicious. It's perfect. Stop trying to decide if you're being screwed or not by the restaurant.
But
so that's the way to do it. It's the same with a beer. If you go to a restaurant, you're going to pay 60 rand for upwards of 60 rand for a normal industrial pint of lager. And that same beer at the bottle store will cost you 14 rand. You know, so it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, I suppose.
But if you spend 65 rand and that beer kisses your soul in the sun, you will never complain about that 65 rand.
So is it a perception thing or is it a reality thing?
That's, I mean,
because now I'll ask you the question again. Some wine that I find really, really acceptably lovely is fairly modestly priced.
Yes, no, that's fine.
And yet I have also.
You're a man in the know, obviously.
Well,
you know what you like.
We do a regular Thursday afternoon wine show. The guys from Tops are very, very, you know, they come generally with
big
good wine.
Big customers of mine, yeah.
But occasionally we get and very occasionally, thank heavens, something that is and I have to confess, it's a completely personal opinion.
Yeah.
But I won't lie, if you give me something to drink that offends my palate, I will say so in the nicest possible way, but I'll let you know.
Yeah.
And often it's the top end numbers that
okay.
give you that experience. And they say, oh, but you're tasting
okay.
a bit like tobacco pipe smokers will say that you, unless you've got a good dose of Latakia in the mix, you're not really a pipe smoker.
It burns your mouth.
And exactly. That's awful to me.
Yeah, yeah.
So does price...
It depends. You know, it's a bit like saying, I don't know, it's a bit like property. You know, again, I'm using similes, you know. You know, like the house might be fantastic, but it's in a terrible area. And it's the same with a big expensive wine. Maybe it's just not what you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, but the guys who do want to spend that kind of money, that's exactly what they're looking for.
But why do certain wines cost more than others?
Again, that does come down to property. You know, it's about place. You know, like good wine is an address more than it's a product. You know, so if you, and I hate doing this because we live in South Africa and we drink South African wine, and it's literally, I think, the most incredible value for money on the planet, South African wines. But if you compare us to somewhere like France or Spain or Italy or one of those places, wines are not named after the grape it's grown. Wines are named after the address. So if you drink Burgundy, it doesn't say you're drinking Chardonnay or Pinot Noir. It's just known that's what you're drinking. So, for example, that's because, back to place, those grapes grow best in that region.
Okay, that's interesting.
And in South Africa, we're learning now. This is a very long conversation. I don't know how long we've been speaking for already, bring me on for another episode. No,
that's a good idea.
No, to be honest, and I hate bringing up apartheid, but the wines were controlled and the winemaking industry was controlled up until the end of that period in South African history. And basically, we've had to start again as an industry from then to learn how to make wine on our own and independently. And so it's taken that long to get to where we are. We've had to pull out all the vines that were planted by the previous regime and plant what grows best where it grows. And now we're learning what to do with it. We're not over-oaking Chardonnays anymore. We're not flipping, dragging out too much tannin and weight from red wines anymore. We're actually learning how to let the land speak to the product. This is a very long conversation.
But it's fascinating.
You're pulling on a thread here. Yeah, it's a hangnail.
I like your idea of coming back and
next time I'll bring wine,
unwrapping some of the stuff, because I want to find out from you why there was an attempt to grow wine on the North Coast. I saw them growing.
That was a disaster. There
they tried with Villard Blanc. Now I don't know if that makes wine.
No, I don't know. I think somebody made that term up.
Okay, it's rubbish.
No, I don't know.
So there's lots to talk
Maybe
about.
Maybe that's something I don't know about. But yeah.
Well, you know, my very special guest, Matt Draper. Thanks. He is an independent wine. Has an independent wine portfolio.
Smokes.
He sells wines to you and I, but in a manner that makes sense. And I'd very much like to invite you to come back.
Okay,
and,
great.
And we can have a sort of regular conversation. I think it's a fascinating one.
I'll tell you what, next time we do a blind tasting, I'll bring two bottles and you tell me which one's expensive and which one's cheap.
It's a date.
Done.
I look forward to that. Now, you're on the afternoon show on Radio Life.